Blog Talk Radio.
Shocked by some and celebrated by others, the George Zimmerman not guilty verdict certainly touched the third rail of race in the judicial system around the country and beyond. It is an established fact that George Zimmerman did kill Trayvon Martin on a rainy day in February 2012. The question remains, what precipitated the tragic death of an unarmed 17-year-old merely walking home with a bag of Skittles and a can of Arizona iced tea? The judge, jury, and executioner became an armed neighborhood watchman wary of black men wearing hoodies. It's all on trial here in Florida. Stand your ground, gun laws, self-defense trials, and the never-ending saga of race in America. Tampa-based attorney Warren Hope Dawson is our special guest today, a veteran attorney who mentored attorneys Daryl Parks and Benjamin Crump, the attorneys representing Trayvon Martin's parents. He'll walk us through the Florida legal system that yielded Saturday night's not guilty verdict. And a very special thank you to my brother, attorney Wilson Copeland, for helping to arrange this interview with attorney Dawson. This is Carol Copeland Thomas, and you're listening to Focus on Empowerment. Hello, my friends. This is Carol Copeland Thomas, and we thank you so much for listening wherever you happen to be, if you're listening live, in the chat room, or as an archive. This certainly is a very important program, and as a primer, I would encourage you to go back into my archives on April 12, 2012, last year, after George Zimmerman was arrested. We actually had Attorney Dawson on the show the first time last year, and now he has graciously consented to come back and speak with us following the verdict. I want to bring him right on because we have lots of things to talk about, lots of things to just sort of muddle through as we explore and determine, you know, was justice actually served in Florida on Saturday night. The past president of the National Bar Association, an extremely distinguished man. I would encourage our guests to go to my blog, tellcarol.com, and go to Carol's blog. Today's blog features an extended biography of our guest, and you can see just the amazing things that he has done in the state of Florida and certainly beyond. Attorney Warren Hope Dawson, thank you so much for coming on our show today.
Well, thank you so much, Carol, and I am happy to join you on this program again. Sorry about the occasion, but happy to be with you, to be talking to your listeners about this very, very, very important development in the law in our nation.
Well, you know, I wrote as a little primer to one of my e-zines that I sent out today to my listeners that I was absolutely shocked when the verdict came down. I knew it was going to be a tough case because of the circumstantial evidence and one person's opinion against another, and the one person is deceased at this time. But with the not guilty and completely cleared, I was shocked and almost in tears on Saturday night. What was your response when you heard the verdict?
I was shocked also. I spent some time watching some developments in the trial. I certainly caught much of what was said in the evenings on the various TV channels about the developments during the day. I probably came to a view that they may very well, the prosecution may very well have not succeeded in laying out a clear case of second-degree murder. Mm-hmm. But I thought for sure that they would achieve a conviction on manslaughter.
Right.
The requirements for the proof of manslaughter or a little bit less, or it might be said that it's significantly less than that of second-degree murder. And they needed, I thought, a drop back, meaning an alternative for the jury to have, rather than the solo offense of second-degree murder, which they managed not to establish. And I might add, talking about how they managed not to establish it, they, among other things, made some glaring prosecutorial errors as lawyers who had the burden of proof to prove that second-degree murder had been committed beyond and to the exclusion of every reasonable doubt. Their approach was shabby, among which was their decision, for example, to give Zimmerman an opportunity through recorded film and other statements, really allowed him to testify or to present his side of the case out of his mouth without ever having to take the stand. Now, ostensibly, their motive for doing that was that there may have been some inconsistencies in his several statements that he had made when the case was being investigated. Well, truth of the matter is that juice that they hoped to get out of that was not nearly worth the squeeze that they engaged in.
You know, clearly we're all looking at the fact that obviously the prosecution just really dropped the ball on many fronts, and you're going through the fact that they had a very shabby approach. What about this whole thing of never, ever introducing the concept of race in this case? And I say that because right before the show, I went back and I listened to the 911 call that George Zimmerman placed before he got out of his car to confront Trayvon Martin. And clearly he was asked to identify the unidentified person. He said, "I think he's black." And then when Trayvon came toward the car, he said, "Oh, yes, he is black." So race was always a factor of this. Is that not true, Attorney Dawson?
Absolutely. And to address whether it was important, if it were not important, then why would the police investigating the matter inquire as to the race of the person?
Right.
And then his answer clearly indicated that he knew what the race was. He apparently, and one would have to assume he knew what the race was when he made statements such as, "These guys always get away," or
right,
words to that effect. He
correct
knew then. He knew then what the race was. And the police officer investigating, or the dispatcher, or whoever it was talking, said, "Well, tell me, what is his race?" And
right,
he immediately responded, "If it was important in the investigation, it was important in the trial."
Right.
But therein lie, you know, the problem with cases, not just in Florida, but all around the country. There is the matter of race. Is such a ticklish subject in many regards as viewed by some people. But the reality of it is that if the justice system somehow could be described as being, as race being unimportant, and that race didn't matter, let me tell you, that would be the only thing in America, maybe in the world, that does not have considerations of race that are involved.
Yeah.
And so the system of justice, as we know it in America, is not free from the issues of race. And to pretend that it is free and that race does not matter and is a lie.
Well, that's true. I actually had a webinar yesterday with a diversity professional and colleague of mine from England, and obviously he knew all about this case. We talked about it during the program, but he cited several other cases in England that were race-related, very similar to the Trayvon Martin case. And one actually erupted into rioting 2 years ago. That was more of a youth unemployment, reaction to the conservative government, but the main instigator or the catalyst for that riot 2 years ago was a black man being shot and killed. So it behooves us to really think that, you know, what's happening here is not happening in other parts of the world. It's just when things like this happen at home, it just hurts so much. It really does. What about the whole concept of stand your ground? How much did that play a factor in this trial, Attorney Dawson?
It seems clear, and maybe even clearer, now that the jurors are speaking up. First, there was one juror, and now two additional jurors have spoken. They clearly fixed their notions on stand your ground, which was a part of the jury instructions that were given to the jury. And I might add, in this particular instance, the jury instructions were given to them verbally, read to them verbally, but also a written copy of those jury instructions were given to them to take with them to the jury room. Mm-hmm. Even though, in a sense, Mr. Zimmerman was not still maintaining a defense based on stand your ground, it was a part of the instructions, and the jury fixed on that and thought that he was entitled to, quote, stand his ground. So the answer is yes. Stand your ground played a very important and unfortunate role in this case.
I want to stay on Trayvon Martin, but I want to pick up on the point that you just made about stand your ground. We know that it came into effect around 2006 in Florida. It now has gone viral. More than 30 states around the United States, including my home state of Michigan, have some kind of stand your ground law. Thank God, here in Massachusetts, we don't have it, so I'm very grateful for that. But just skipping a little bit around your state, and can you give us very quickly your insight on this Marissa Alexander case, not related to Trayvon Martin, but definitely related to Stand Your Ground, where this young woman who was trying to defend herself, she shot over the head of her abusive husband, and she ends up getting 20 years in prison. We're all trying to scratch our heads at this point with that particular case. Attorney Dawson, please help us understand what is going on with that case.
Okay.
And mind you, listener, she's an African-American, too. I should definitely say that.
That's right. And she got treated very badly. But let me give you a little background on that.
Sure.
First of all, stand your ground is a law that now has been adopted by maybe some 30 states. But also, there is a punishment concept that followed the Bushes when they were governor of Texas, and then the other Bush was governor of Florida, mm-hmm. called 10-20 life. If you possess a firearm in connection with the commission of a crime, in addition to whatever other penalty is provided for the crime that you may commit, there also, if you have a firearm in your possession, you could face a 10-year mandatory minimum, which means that you have to do 10 years in prison every day for every day, no gain time. On the other hand, if not only you had a firearm in your possession, but you actually fired it in connection with the commission of a crime, then you could, and this woman faced 20 years mandatory minimum sentence. And the third part of that, if you actually shot someone in the commission of a crime, unrelated to the other penalties that might apply, you could be sentenced to life imprisonment for actually hitting someone with the firearm. Now, in this instance, the facts are simple that she was married to a man who was an abuser. I might add, a braggadocious, acknowledged abuser. He says, I beat all my baby mamas, and he had beat this woman. And she attempted to escape from him and went out from the house. They were at home, and she went into the garage, fleeing from him, trying to get away. It was her testimony that she had left her keys to the car in the house because she ran out trying to get away from him. Her testimony that the garage door would not come up. It was apparently in disrepair, and that was her testimony. And so she had a gun in the garage. Mm-hmm. She got the gun in the garage and came back into the house, and sure enough, as soon as she re-entered the house, here he comes again, fixing to attack her again. She decides to give him some pause by firing a round, not to hit him, but shot above him to give him some pause to scare him so that she could get out the door. And that's what she did. She didn't shoot him. She didn't intend to shoot him, and she didn't shoot him.
And because she couldn't get out the garage door, she went back in the house. This incident happened, and you know, obviously the rest is history. And I'm sure that she was probably trying to
finish that.
Yes, yes, sir. Yes.
And as soon as she left, he called the police, saying that his wife had just shot at him. So she was charged with aggravated assault. Okay, which has a 15-year penalty to it, but because of this 10-20 life, there also could be a 20-year mandatory minimum sentence applied to it. But one of the operating factors, and I heard somebody else discuss it, but they left out the fact that generally a garage under the law is not considered a part of the house, but as a, even though it's under the same roof.
Right.
So when she re-entered the house, she was regarded as having become the aggressor at that point.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. She basically had armed herself and re-entered the house. The discussion goes that had she stayed in the garage and he then came out in the garage, she could have stood her ground. She was in her home. She could have stood her ground and shot him, maybe even killed him, had she remained in the garage and he came out there. But the fact that she came back in the house was kind of sort of like her going someplace, getting a gun, and coming back. And having done that, she become, in a sense, the hunter rather than the game.
And weren't there children in the house? Wouldn't that be
well,
a reason
yeah,
why she would want to come
back? The children were never in danger. The prosecutor tried to suggest that, well, when she shot into the wall, that there were children on the other side.
Oh,
the children
no.
were never in danger.
No, they weren't in danger. I'm just thinking about those children being in the house, and she's a mother, so she's not only concerned about her own safety, but their safety also.
Absolutely.
Perhaps.
That's exactly right.
Although, to be fair,
the children, there was no testimony or evidence that the children were ever in danger by either her, from him or her.
Or her,
the husband or the wife never endangered the children in this case.
But here we have a young woman, again, an African-American, and as she has now said on television, she said, this is not entertainment, this is my life that I'm talking about here. She's in jail for 20 years, African-American, where she couldn't use stand your ground, or she was not allowed to use stand your ground in her own defense. And then we have this case of George Zimmerman, who was allowed in part to use stand your ground to get off. It's just absolutely absurd.
Let me give you another
one. Makes you angry. Yes, sir. Yeah.
Let me give you another one. Just a few months ago here in Tampa. Now, the case that we just finished talking about with the woman who now is in prison for 20 years, that happened in Jacksonville, Florida.
Right.
The same prosecutor that handled the Zimmerman case also handles, she actually is the prosecutor in Jacksonville, Florida.
Right.
So that same office that handled the Zimmerman case handled this woman's case and put her away for 20 years.
And we're talking about Angela Corey, who was involved in both cases.
Angela Corey is the state attorney for the Jacksonville area. And Angela Corey was appointed by the governor of Florida to handle that case because the state attorney that actually covers Sanford, Florida, where this occurred, had declined to go forward with the case. But then a prosecutorial error made by Angela Corey in this instance was, as they often do, and that is they overcharge you, charge you for a higher crime maybe than they should have, hoping that that will force you to plead to a lesser offense, and they never have to try the case. Well, in this instance, Zimmerman didn't surrender to the higher charge of second-degree murder, but instead went on and actually defended himself through his lawyers and went through the trial. But I want to mention this other case involving a black man in Tampa, Florida. It goes right down the road of what happened to the woman, the black woman in Jacksonville. A black man had a home in a integrated neighborhood, saw some kids out there playing, doing skateboarding. The kids are primarily white. This black guy goes out and he says, "Hey, you guys are not supposed to be skateboarding out here."
Okay.
Whereupon a white man, who apparently had been a former football player or some other, and much younger, 250 or more pound guy, white guy, says, "Hey, leave these kids alone." At that point, the black guy sort of evidenced the fact that he had a gun in his belt.
Mm-hmm.
Well, rather than that scaring the larger white guy, the larger white guy decided, "Okay, you got a gun, I'm going to take it from you." So the white guy jumps on him, okay, and attempts to take the gun. In fact, the white guy who got shot, the white guy wound up getting shot and killed. His little daughter said, "Yeah, my daddy went after him." Okay?
My
the jury found him guilty, even though he claimed the right
to
stand his
ground.
This guy jumped on him, and it because he had never actually made an aggressive move, although someone technically could say that by showing that he had a gun, that that amounted to an assault of a kind.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? In any event, the white guy jumped on him, but the white guy wound up getting shot and killed. The black guy was found guilty, even though he claimed stand your ground, and he now is on appeal trying to. The only good thing about it is the judge in that instance did allow him bond pending appeal, which was kind of unusual. But again, there's another black defendant that bit dust
and went down the drain on this
stand your ground. But they allowed, in the Zimmerman case, for him to walk free on stand your ground.
Right. So with the homeowner in Tampa, did he get life imprisonment, and that's what's on appeal right now?
No. The judge was very
more lenient,
vicious, and sentenced him. I don't remember the exact sentence, but it was more like about 15 years.
Okay.
In the case of the woman in Jacksonville, the man was never even hit. In other words, not only
gets 20 years. And let me remind my listeners that not only that, but the jury was out for 12 minutes. It took 12 minutes to convict her. Just a stunning mischaracterization of justice. Just amazing. So, again, we're seeing the patterns here, and as you have said, it's not just in Florida. It's just sadly, because of the way the laws are now configured in Florida, we're just seeing multiple cases like this taking place in Florida. I've seen some of the attorneys who have been on television, and they've just said, you can walk in out of any other court anywhere in the United States and you see race playing itself out in terms of how people are treated, the sentences that they get, and the kind of justice that is served. So, Attorney Dawson, in just the minute or two we have left, you have certainly given us a lot of things to think about. Where do we go from here? What do you think is going to happen with the Department of Justice? What do you think is going to happen with any kind of civil suit that may come about with the Martin family? Where do we go from here?
Well, I want to talk about that, but I want to add one other aspect, I guess, I think, and this is my opinion, the opinion of Warren Hope Dawson, that these laws, such as this Stand Your Ground, are laws that are designed to increase essentially the capacity to use firearm to allegedly protect yourself, aimed to some extent by new crimes of a kind like home invasion.
Yes.
Like carjacking.
Mm-hmm.
The whole idea being is that someone thought that, well, maybe if you get carjacked, somebody tries to take your car, with, that you basically can kill them.
Mm-hmm.
And the same with a home invasion. And they has traditionally been the right of self-defense to defend yourself in your castle, that
right.
you have no duty to retreat in your own home. All
right.
of that was already law. So why
right.
did they pass new
why
laws?
Why did you need this one?
That's right.
Exactly. What about the Department of Justice, very quickly, Attorney Dawson? Do you think that they're going to file civil rights violations?
I believe they will, and I think they should. I believe
mm-hmm.
they will, and I think they should. That has been, you know, of course, now you got to watch out. The federal court would be in Orlando
mm-hmm.
if that's filed. The federal
mm-hmm.
court, this happened in Sanford, Florida. The closest
mm-hmm.
federal court is a few miles away in Orlando, Florida.
Mm-hmm.
The federal court in Orlando, Florida would draw jurors, potential jurors, from essentially the same area that
wow.
these jurors came from. Remember?
Versus Miami or Fort Lauderdale or an area like
well,
that where
who's
there may be a fair
down there either, okay? But you would get essentially the same population
right.
call for jury duty in a federal civil rights case that the Justice Department could file against Zimmerman.
Mm-hmm.
And if they did so, he would be entitled to a jury trial. And
mm-hmm.
if he had a jury trial, the jurors would come essentially from the same area of the state,
mm-hmm.
including Sanford and Seminole County, and all of those would be the source of where the jurors would come from.
Well,
the
only hope would be that there would be 12 jurors instead of six. I think just having six jurors
I beg to differ. It ain't the number. It's the attitude.
It's the attitude. Well, that too. That
okay.
Too.
You know, 12, 18 wouldn't be solving the problem.
I'm hearing you. Yes.
The problem is the racial attitude.
Right.
That's the problem.
Right.
In fact, the more you add to it, probably the more you would potentially have people who would do
yeah.
exactly the same thing.
And
I might add,
there
is some confusion out there that I want to comment about. And there
very
are
quickly.
Those that under the Florida's Stand Your Ground law, mm-hmm. if indeed you lawfully stood your ground under that law, then you are immune from prosecution and you're immune from civil suit. Okay, and of course, I don't think that state law could not prevent a federal hate crime or a federal civil rights prosecution, because the federal law would prevail over the state law. Okay.
so much.
I've learned so much from you.
There is so much more. I'm sure that at some point within the next few months, I'm probably going to come back to you to have you on the show. Certainly, if in fact these this federal suit goes forward, I'm studying. We're all trying to scratch our heads, trying to figure out, you know, why this happened. But Attorney Warren Hope Dawson, thank you so much for being a guest on my program. We appreciate your insight, your vision, and just the level of expertise that you've brought to the table today. I encourage everyone to just continue to pay attention to this very important case. It is definitely going to be talked about for months and years to come. This is Carol Copeland Thomas. Thank you so much for listening to the show today. We'll see you the next time.